Welcome back to the ACSI podcast, that's the Academy of Clinicians, Scientists and Innovators. For this episode, which we recorded in March, we are celebrating International Women's Day, and so today I have Professor Liu Yi-Sin to join me on this podcast. Professor Liu Yi-Sin is the co-president of the ACSI. She's also the senior consultant at the Director General Health Office in the Ministry of Health, and she was also the executive director for the National Center of Infectious Diseases, NCID, from 2017 to 2023, where she led the country through multiple epidemics, including the most recent COVID pandemic. And she has been an advocate for local clinical and translational research ever since. She was also featured on the BBC's 100 Women list of the most inspiring and influential women worldwide in 2020. Tell me, Prof. Liu, how does it feel to be on that list?
Thank you. Thank you, NPN, for inviting me to this podcast. I must say that possibly I'm being placed in the right place at the right time, being recognized because of my work in COVID, fighting against the COVID pandemic. So to me, I think I am very, very fortunate.
Tell me, Prof. Liu, how did your experience with past epidemics and public health crises prepare you for the COVID pandemic? And why was it important for us to develop clinician scientists within NCID?
Well, partially because of the accumulations of the past experiences. I'm sure many of us can recall the very difficult times that we had in the past, dealing with SARS-2003, SARS-CoV-1. And I think a lot of all this learning that we managed to gather started right from the past where we had multiple outbreaks. I just want to bring back these issues about the year 2003 when we had the SARS outbreak in Singapore. I must say that we were heavily criticized about the poor academic performance. So in other words, we did not capture the opportunity for us to better understand the disease as quickly as possible. We are still looking at information from other parts of the world, from Hong Kong and especially from China as well at the point in time, with a failure to generate our own understanding. And I think we learned from that particular episodes and experience and realized the significance and the importance of having our own local capability to do outbreak research.
Can you tell us about your own interest in research and how did that come about?
I never really developed myself as a researcher. I must say that a lot of these are opportunity and just very fortunate to be in the right place at the right time. So if you look back at the episodes of the outbreak, so certainly Singapore has no less than any challenges from the upper virus infections, that is the dengue. So the questions came to my mind was basically in 2004, 2005. When we had a significantly large dengue wave. And we were asking how to manage dengue in our own very specific local situations where we see mostly adult dengue. At that point in time, it's young adult and adolescents. Where other parts of the world mainly handle pediatric dengue. So where to get information to treat our own local demands? How do we treat adolescents, young adults, or middle-aged adults with dengue? We have no clue. Basically, there's no data. I must say that the only paper that I managed to search through all the international publications was a paper in Singapore Medical Journal written by one of my close colleagues, Desmond Tai, at the point in time. And he asked a very simple question. When was a good time to discharge a patient? Can we use platelet count as an indicator to discharge patients? And basically, we just admit all the patients into the hospital and wait for platelet counts to raise above 70,000 before we discharge them. So you can imagine so much of the unanswered question at the point in time, how do we manage adolescents, young adults with dengue? And there's no clue. So the only way for us to better manage the condition is through research. Find out the answer for yourself. And it's how I started dabbling with the research at the point in time, answering a few questions, how do they manifest, when would be a good time to discharge them, when would be, you know, the indications to admit them. Again, you know, very fortuitous in a way that in the year 2008, together with many collaborators, we put together the flagship grant to study dengue. We call it Stop Dengue, was funded. A lot of work, actually not from myself, a lot of work actually put by my collaborators putting together the grant. But because we need the clinicians to understand the clinical problem and for the clinicians to lead, and therefore I was put in that position. And I just want to say that, you know, in the right time, the right place. Because of that flagship study, it builds up our research capability and capacity in Communicable Disease Center at a point in time and progressively moved toward the National Center for Infectious Disease. Back on research on outbreak is exactly the same. You have no answer that you can get anywhere else except do your own research, find your own answer.
I think the lesson here is that every doctor and every clinician is in their own special place where they are at the right time and right place to collect data that is most relevant to their own patient population.
Yeah, absolutely. And don't forget, because I think a lot of time is building the capacity and also building the platform. Because if you have good platform, you can support multiple different focus of research and research topics. And hopefully, some of the research topics is of great relevance to our local clinical practices, great relevance to our public health, can also be internationally very, very competitive.
Prof Leo, as Executive Director of NCID, you were a mentor to many clinician scientists and researchers over the years. Do you have any tips that you picked up from your own mentors of how to inspire the next generation of researchers?
Well, I think the current generations, and hopefully, you know, we will continue to improve in that, that we always have someone to look at, or you know, you can have some pre-existing example. But I recall during my time, there wasn't, because research in Communicable Disease Center at the time was still very, very nascent. So there wasn't anyone that already developed a platform or developed the entire capacity, capability to do research. And I can recall that it was extremely challenging and difficult because we had to have our own recruitment of the staff. We had to put in energies and focus to even build a clinic. And some of you may remember the Infectious Disease Research Clinic at Communicable Disease Center. It was basically built because of the availability of the funding from the flagship program, which is Stop Dengue. And that clinic can be used for many other purposes. Subsequently, we use it to enroll other conditions like Zika, vaccine studies, and things like that. So I think it is important in terms of different generations, you build up the capacity and then you provide it to the next generations and generations to come.
And now that you have stepped down from being Executive Director of the NCID, you've taken on this role as Co-President of the ACSI. What changes would you like to see in our research community to help the next generation achieve the goals?
I think a lot of clinicians can be researchers, and I strongly believe that the definitions of researchers not just confined to a group of individuals that manage to get grant or being given clinician scientists or you know translational award also titled. Anyone can do research as long as you have the burning questions. And for many of us as a clinicians, we do have a lot of burning questions when we handle our patients. And some of these burning questions you cannot find anywhere in terms of the answer. And there you are. You will be the one to find the answer and through research. However, having said that, it's not that simple in a way that, you know, if you do not have an institutions or you do not have a supporting platform, then whatever idea you have, the desire you have, may just fizzle off. And therefore, there are two things. One is to make sure that everybody understands what research is for. Basically, it's for you to answer questions, for you to improve clinical management or improve public health outcome. Two is for the institutions to ensure that they put in resources, they put in what is necessary to build up the structure and platform to facilitate clinicians to want to answer questions.
Yeah, that is going to be an uphill challenge. I can imagine, this is speaking from experience and also what I hear from a lot of my juniors, that even if they do have questions, they don't know the first place to turn to. I mean, who is going to help them answer the question? Where are they going to get funds? Where are they going to get time? And then that's something that the ACSI is looking into to try to promote this kind of community for research in NHG and LKC.
Yes, I think we have to do our very best to continuously put in effort and also engaging the clinicians, engaging the leaders, for them to understand that we all have to work together. We are all in the same ecosystem. Lacking one element, you will not have great success.
And just looking at the ACSI webpage, I noted that only 31% of our clinician scientists and innovators here are female. How would you foresee encouraging more women to take on the role of a clinician scientist?
Well, again, it's everybody's effort. It's not just whether the females, our female colleagues want or do not want to do research. I do believe that a lot of us female looking after our patients, usually we are very caring for people. And we do have issues and questions that we would want to answer to be able to manage our patients. But at the same time, I think we also have to be aware of the institution support, whether that is sufficient to provide to our female colleagues to be able to excel in the field. Looking on the bright side, I do see an increasing number of many of our female colleagues taking up this challenge, put in great efforts and having a very good outcome. And I think we do know many of them within our own institution as well. So this basically will serve as the promoter, I hope, and be able to be the positive example and having more people coming in. Very importantly is for all of us to embrace the idea, because I realize that sometimes we tend to be more of the inferior side in the sense that, you know, we may not be being taken seriously and we just have to work harder, essentially. So in other words, if the male needs to put in this effort to get the outcome, as a female colleagues, we have to work harder. We have to prove our case.
Yes, and that's why it's very important to lift those up that have succeeded, to show everyone that it's possible with the right amount of work.
Yes, let's all do that, because I think it's important, regardless of gender. To me, you know, gender agnostic. I just want to make sure that those who want to answer the questions, who want to do research, are given the opportunity, given the necessary support for them to do the job.
Yes, okay. And on that note, I think that was a lot of very wise words from Prof. Leo. And thank you very much, Prof. Leo, for joining me on the podcast today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yes, okay. Thank you. And I'll see you around. Thank you. Thank you, Prof, for joining. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the ACS Hire podcast. If you want to reach out to us, our email is in the description that accompanies this episode. And you can get us on all your podcast programs, including iTunes, Spotify, and Pocket Casts. Thank you. And I'm Dr. Etienne Wang, and I'll see you next time.